This week on Family Anatomy, Anatomy of Lying, Part 2.
The hosts of Family Anatomy are psychologists, but they're not your psychologists. So if you want to talk to someone about family or mental health issues, you can get a referral from your family doctor. This show is for information only.
Welcome to Family Anatomy, your source for parenting and relationship information, with your hosts, Dr. Giuseppe Spizzano
and Dr. Brian McDonald. And we are talking for the second time about lying tonight.
That's right. So I guess, I'm going to say the same thing about you being a brilliant person again. Or we did that the first time, right?
You are all about repeating. We heard that on episode 100. You're all about repeating your little jabs and digs.
Okay. Last time, you're a fantastic individual.
Thank you. Thank you. I can tell when you're telling the truth too. So, you know, we talked about lying, I think around episode 95. So not that long ago, but the bonus tonight is that we managed to get in touch with the expert.
That's right. Dr. Victoria Tawar.
Is that a good thing to be an expert in lying?
We're going to ask her that.
Well,
let's ask her when we get her on. But
yeah, but she is the expert because she's been studying for years. She's been studying how kids learn about lying and telling the truth.
That's right. And how adults may or may not be able to pick that up and how that changes over the years. She's a psychologist at McGill University in Montreal,
so not too far away from where we are here in Ottawa. And she doesn't just do research on lying. There's a few other, it's mostly been lying when you go through her papers. There's lots of research on lying, but she does think about kids' moral development, so how they learn the difference between right and wrong, which is pretty closely linked there when you're thinking about lying. And I was really interested to see some of the new things that are going on in her lab. One of her studies is about how kids, young kids, gossip with one another while they're playing.
Right. And I guess, you know, there's a lot of overlapping areas. There's the moral development of kids involved. There's, you know, how parents are kind of, on the one hand, can be asking kids to do some white lies from time to time because mm-hmm. there's social-emotional understanding that has to happen as well that kind of gets pulled into this whole topic, I guess.
Well, she also talks about something that I think you know a little bit about. And that is, what about kids who are telling stories about being bullied or picked on at school? And how do you tell the difference between when they're telling the truth and when they're exaggerating those kinds of things? And we had your son in here a while ago, and I don't think we left that stuff on the show. But remember, he was talking about being picked on at school, and it really seemed like a tale that grew and grew and grew in the telling.
It did. Once I remember what you said, once you get a microphone in front of a kid,
all bets are off.
That's right.
W.C. Fields said, and, never work with kids or animals.
Yeah,
right?
That turned out to be nothing. But, you know, there's this whole thing about, again, what cognitive stage you're at, whether you're just telling a story or whether you can tell the difference between reality and fantasy and telling stories and that kind of thing. So we're going to get a lot more insight out of Dr. Tawar on this.
And let's get her on the phone.
Let's do it. And now I'd like to welcome Dr. Victoria Tawar to the show. Hello, Victoria.
Hi.
Hi. It's nice to have you on the show joining us. And you're a psychologist at McGill University, and you've done a lot of research into kids and lying in particular. But before we get into that, maybe you could give us a little background into yourself and how you came to study this area.
Well, I was a graduate student, and I was particularly interested in research related to theory of mind, which is looking at how children understand different people have different thoughts and beliefs and knowledge, and that someone can have thoughts, beliefs, feelings, knowledge that is set different from yours. And this is something that develops sort of early on around 4 years of age. And I was quite interested in how children sort of cognitively develop and how they develop this understanding of other people's minds. And as a result of that, I got interested in lie-telling behavior, because lie-telling behavior requires you to have some of this understanding, because you're essentially creating a false belief in another person. So you need to be recognize that they can have a different belief than what your belief is, or a different belief from reality, by instilling them a false belief so they believe something that is not actually true. So that's how I sort of lit upon the topic originally as a grad student. And what happened, though, is when I looked into the literature, I discovered there really wasn't that much research about lying. Mainly, it sort of people talked about it in terms of anecdotally, you know, whether children lie and how they lie. And but there'd be no empirical research, really. So I thought, well, the very first step is to sort of look at, you know, at what age do they start to tell lies? And then I went from there.
It's sort of like when I look over your research, it feels like lying is kind of the tip of the iceberg. And maybe, I don't know if this is the right metaphor, but below that is all these interweaving areas, like you just mentioned. And there's like the moral development of kids, their ability to read the mind of another person, and, you know, the different messages that they get, and their cognitive development. So there's all these underlying kinds of processes that are happening, and what you're looking at the top of that is the lying.
Yeah, lie telling is actually, and it's a very interesting behavior, because it kind of intersects a whole sort of range of different sort of development milestones in children. It relates to their cognitive development. It relates to their social development, how we socialize children to act and behave in sort of social situations, their moral development, how we learn about, you know, what is acceptable and what is unacceptable behavior. So it's the sort of emotional development, because lie-telling requires a certain degree of self-control and emotion regulation if you're going to be successful at it. So it's an interesting behavior, because its emergence and its sort of development is all related to a host of cognitive, social, moral factors that come to play in the child's development.
And lying is a really normal behavior as part of kids growing up, right? Is there a normal progression to that?
Yeah, lie telling. This is something that, you know, often parents don't realize, is that when your child first tells that little lie, especially when they're quite young, because children can actually start telling lies, is we've seen evidence of as young as about 2.5, especially when they have older siblings. But usually 3-4 years of age, they definitely start to tell an occasional lie. And it's actually a sign of their maturing cognitive abilities. And we actually see this universally around, all around the world, children around that age start to tell lies. And it is because of this sort of universal cognitive development that's happening. And it is because they're starting to understand other people and other people's thoughts and beliefs. And they're starting to understand the world better. And they're able to now sort of put that knowledge to use. So in a way, it's a good sign, because it shows children are developing cognitively. And in fact, some children can be delayed in their lie-telling behavior or not lie at all, such as autistic children are either delayed in lying, or some parents with autistic children report their children don't lie. So it is a marker of sort of essentially what I was talking about before, of theory of mind understanding, of developing this understanding and perspective-taking skills. Now, it's a byproduct of that development, you might say, in that it's not socially something we want children to do. So when it first appears very normally and naturally in young children, then what happens is a process of socialization over the next few years, as children are taught by their parents and the adults around them about the importance of telling the truth and not lying.
Right. And so just to maybe go back to that point you made, if your child was not lying, that it might say something about their having run into a roadblock in terms of their being able to put themselves in someone else's shoes.
It may do. I mean, some children, when children start to typically lie, there's a range there between 2.5 and 4, 4 or 5. But yes, children who are more cognitively delayed, often we don't see lying is delayed. In children, however, I wouldn't like parents to suddenly get all upset and worried if their child doesn't lie to them. It doesn't necessarily mean it's a cognitive delay. Also, you don't always notice when your child lies to you as well.
Right. Now, the other end of the spectrum too, where you might say, at what point should parents be concerned about the lying of their kids?
I think this is also a question. You know, parents often are alarmed when their child lies. The first lie that they sort of do detect the child telling, because it is it's that loss of interpersonal trust. Now, it depends. Sometimes, you know, you catch your child telling a lie about something really obvious, and it's almost comical because the child sort of, you know, they've got chocolate smeared all over their face, and you just ask them if they ate the chocolate chip cookie, you know, and they're sort of shaking their head no emphatically when it's so obvious they ate the chocolate. And so sometimes, you know, it's considered almost funny sometimes by parents. But other times it can seem to parents, you know, quite a shock that their child actually just lied to them. And so that can make parents alarmed. But what I normally say is that for most children, they do tell these occasional lies, especially in the younger years. They may tell lies sort of somewhat indiscriminately as they learn what they can get away with and not. So they're kind of testing their boundaries, and they soon learn that they can't really tell lies too often. I mean, they also realize, because their lies can be seen through, so the child who's just said they didn't eat the chocolate chip cookie, and yet mom knows for sure that you ate that cookie. Wow, mom's all-knowing. But they soon learn over time that, you know, they can't get away with such lies. But they also get smarter, and they also learn that they have to wipe away the chocolate. I had a colleague who had two children who ate ice cream after school before she got home, even though they were told that they were not allowed to, and they would hide the ice cream bowls under the couch if she came home and they were doing it. And she would go under the couch and retrieve the bowls, and by looking at the spoon, she could tell if her daughter or her son had ate the ice cream. But they didn't realize this because, see, the daughter always took a small spoon and the son always took a big spoon. But they thought that she had some sort of sixth sense, because she could pick up the bowl and just look at the one who ate the ice cream and said, "You were eating ice cream." And so she says, "I can't wait. I don't know how long I'll be able to keep this up until they finally tumble to it, but it's working for me now." So you know, children sort of learn over time that they usually can't lie in most situations, but it doesn't stop them from telling the occasional lie. And when you think about it, most adults tell the occasional lie too. And children, by the time they get to, like, you know, 10 years of age, tell the occasional lie. They're not lying so often, only occasionally. So when it becomes a chronic behavior is when it becomes, it sort of becomes chronic, where they're lying a lot and frequently and all the time, or they're lying about really, really important things that are, you know, that are important. So those are the times when parents have to be concerned. And sometimes it's a concern because chronic lie telling is a symptom of other behavioral problems, but also can be a concern just what the child is lying about. So if you discover, for instance, that your child's lying about, you know, not eating their lunches at school, it's a good idea to investigate what's motivating them about lying about that, because, you know, maybe they're hiding something, like they are hiding the fact that the bully at school is robbing them of their lunch. But they feel too much shame to tell you that, and so they've just lied about it as sort of the lesser of two evils in their mind. So sometimes you have to discover why they are lying, because there may be something quite important sort of behind that you really want to get to. Rather than just chastising them about the lie, you would actually want to know that they are being bullied, so you can help the child with that situation.
So you might want to pull back a little bit, because I think parents can take it personally that, you know, my child's actually lying to me and it's upsetting them. But it might not be such a personal thing. There might be something behind that that has nothing to do with you as a parent.
That's right. And this is the stuff that you want to know. So if you sort of just react very negatively and sort of chastise a child for lying to you about, you know, eating their lunch and start bemoaning all the time you spent making them lunches and here they are not even eating it, and you go into a rant about it, and you've lost the opportunity to sort of hear what they have to say and also to hear what is motivating them. And this becomes really important as children get into the teenage years. It's very important to keep the lines of communication open and for you to make it clear that even if they have something to tell you that you might not want to hear, that, you know, might be make you feel upset, it's better for them to be truthful and tell you about these things than to conceal that information. It's better for you to know what your child's up to and to have a relationship with your child where they can tell you stuff than for them to be concealing stuff that might be potentially harmful to harmful for them, or, you know, that they're engaging in things that they shouldn't be engaging in.
And that's a tough one for parents, for sure.
Yeah. And I mean, it is tough because sometimes we just, you know, the natural reaction is to react. But we do have to pull back and sort of also look at why the child is lying. Because if we look at the why the child's lying, then we're more effectively going to be able to communicate to them why they shouldn't lie, and also, you know, be able to deal with why they lie. Even if we think of a young child, a lot of the reasons young children lie is they're afraid of getting in trouble. Like the child who ate the cookie that they were told that they were not allowed to eat before dinner time. A lot of lies the young children tell are to avoid negative consequences, avoid punishment. But you know, it's important that we talk to children so they understand that, you know, even if you broke the vase, mom's vase, I'd rather you told me that you broke it rather than trying to lay blame on someone else or come up with an elaborate lie. I may not be happy that you broke the vase, but I will appreciate that you at least told me the truth that you broke the vase, and together we'll work out a way that you can help, you know, fix the vase or save up some money to replace the vase or something like that. So I mean, we need to give credit to when children do tell the truth. That's quite an important thing.
Now, for parents who have one child, it's pretty easy to tell who broke the vase, but I have two boys at home, and so often I walk into a situation where I get completely opposite stories from each child. Is there a way that's proven, I guess, from your lab to encourage kids to tell the truth?
The bad news is that there's no foolproof way of detecting who's a liar and who's not. There's no Pinocchio nose. people would like to pretend there is, and there's some people that even will try and make a lot of money trying to say there is or prove some method of doing it, but there's actually really is no foolproof method. But what there are ways of encouraging truth-telling in children, and we've seen in the lab that when you encourage the positive consequences of telling the truth, that children, if this is, we reinforce this to children, children become more likely to tell the truth. So to give you an example, we did a study where children could commit a transgression. They could peek and play with a toy that we told them very explicitly they were not allowed to play with. And then later on, we would ask them about their behavior. And what we find is that typically about 75% of children sort of between like 4 and 8 will lie about that and say, no, I didn't play with the toy. But when we read them stories we read them stories kind of similar to stories like Pinocchio or moral stories like the George Washington who cut down a cherry tree story. And he cuts down the cherry tree, and then his father later asks him, you know, did you cut down this cherry tree? And George Washington owns up and confesses that he did. And the father says to him, well, I did love that cherry tree, but I'm glad, you know, I'm proud that you at least told me the truth about it. When we tell stories like this, this actually has a greater effect on children than telling them stories where the character gets in trouble for lying. Like, for instance, the story about the boy who cried wolf. So when we emphasize positive consequences, and we've done this again in a number of different ways, we replicated this through, not through stories, but just merely through instructions to the child about, you know, telling them what the, it's really important to tell the truth because it's the right thing to do, and you'll feel good about yourself if you tell the truth, and I'll be pleased with you if you tell the truth. When we emphasize the positive consequences for truth-telling, this does have an impact on their behavior. When we emphasize negative consequences, punishment, it really just teaches children that, I better lie better next time so I can get away with it. But when we talk about the positive consequences of truth-telling and why it's important to tell truth, and we do that, that will have an effect on children's behavior. It will not completely eliminate their lie-telling behavior, but it will significantly decrease their lie-telling behavior. And the other factor that, if paired with that, is powerful is modeling truth-telling behavior. You also have to be truthful. You cannot be going around telling your child to be truthful and telling them the importance of being truthful, and then they see you lying, because then you're sending mixed messages. And we have to be careful about that, because adults do tell lies occasionally, and often we tell lies that we don't even register as lies, such as, you know, the telemarketer calls you, and you say, oh, I'm really busy now, I can't talk, and you put down the phone, and you've just been sitting there watching TV. Or you take your child to the movies, and you try to get them in for, you know, the child rate or something. So you have to be careful, too, that you also model truth-telling behavior. And the third important factor that can really increase truth-telling is to make sure that when you do have a child that tells the truth, that you recognize that. So that it's so easy to recognize when a child does something wrong, but when they do it right, you need to recognize it so that there is some recognition for it. Because if you're telling them truth-telling is important, but then when they tell the truth, all they get is into loads of trouble all over again for, you know, breaking that vase, then, and nobody says, well, at least I'm glad you told me the truth, then they think, you know what, this truth-telling thing isn't working out for me. I think a better strategy is to lie about it, and then I might not get in trouble at all. So it is also important to recognize truth-telling.
Well, I guess it gets a little bit complicated, though, if you start thinking about pro-social lying, which I know you've also looked into. Tell us a little bit about that.
Pro-social lies are an interesting set of lies. So essentially, when I say pro-social lying, what we mean is that these are lies told really for the benefit of somebody else. They may even be at a cost to your own self. But they're told for the benefit of someone else. In some cases, they're told to be polite. So for instance, you know, someone asks you if they... you know, if they look good in their new outfit, but you actually don't like the outfit, but you might say, oh, it's very nice, or you go over to someone's house and they cook you a meal and it's actually very salty, and they ask you if it's nice, and you say, oh, yes, it's wonderful, thank you so much. So we tell these lies often to be polite, and they are actually considered somewhat acceptable in our society. We don't like lie-telling. We don't want people to lie, but on the other hand, when we are presented with cases where people tell these lies, we rate pro-social lies, we rate them less negatively, because we understand that the person's intention was not to harm the other individual, but rather their intention was to be polite or to benefit the other person, to be nice to the other person. So these lies are interesting because while we're busy telling children not to lie, they sometimes see adults telling these lies. And they may even be explicitly or implicitly encouraged to tell these lies. I know a case of a colleague whose three-year-old went, for Christmas at his mother's place, and the grandmother gave it a gift to the child, and the child opened it up and didn't like it. And there were lots of tears on both the child and the grandmother's side. They were not very happy. The child wasn't very happy, and poor grandma felt terrible. And so the next year they said, you know, it's very important that you tell grandma that you like her gift and you thank her for it. And all the way up, it was a two-hour drive to grandma's. All the way up, they sort of said, remember, you're going to tell grandma that you like your gift and you're going to thank her for it because she's, you know, spent a lot of time trying to get you this gift. And so when they got there and the child opened up the gift, peered at the gift, and then said in a very loud whisper to her father, what do I do, Daddy? I really like it. So, but this shows you an example of how we sometimes do encourage cells to be polite. And we actually see, when we see children tell these labs in the in our lab, we actually see parents sometimes are actually pleased that their child was at least being polite. So we actually create a similar situation to that story with my colleague where we give children a gift and they're expecting a neat toy because we have all these neat toys in the lab and what they get is sort of a cruddy bar of soap. And then we say to the child, and we leave the room and the child opens up the gift while they're alone and they look at the soap and you see them on the video camera, they kind of roll up their nose and go, ugh, soap, why did I get soap? And then the gift giver comes back and says, oh, I didn't get a chance to ask you, do you like your gift? And what we see is a lot of children, especially as they get older, suddenly kind of brighten up and they have this big smile and they say, oh, yes, I really like it. And even older children can come up with, you know, reasons why they like it. They'll say, oh, yes, I really like it. I collect soap. Or this will be great to clean my daddy with or things like that. So so as children are more socialized, they're actually socialized. We're somewhat socialized to tell these kind of politeness lies.
Those studies are so interesting, and we were looking at your website today just before the show, and there are some descriptions of the, it looks like, studies that are going on right now or some things that are very recent, and one of the ones that jumped out at me was a study about how kids gossip with one another. Can you tell us a little bit about the kinds of things that are currently going on in your lab?
Yeah, the one that you're just mentioning is a recent study we're doing, which we're looking at how children gossip and exchange information in sort of in their sort of friendship dyads, in their friendship groups. And so we're looking at how that relates, like what is the types of information that they gossip about and how they exchange that information and how it's related to sort of their cognitive and social development and also the types of friendships that they have. So that's one study that we're doing. We're also doing a number of studies looking at children's lie-telling behavior. And then on top of that, we're also looking at two other things. We're looking at children's internet use and cyberbullying. So children, sort of how frequently they use the internet and what are their experiences of cyberbullying and how they perceive different exchanges amongst their peers on the internet. Whether they perceive these exchanges as positive or negative, depending on the context. And the other one is we're looking at area of research is we look at studies on looking at children's spirituality, their conceptions of spirituality, and how that helps them with coping with life transitions and stress, and how that also impacts in their conceptions of death, and how they sort of come to understand death and what are the conversations that parents and children have about death, you know, when, for instance, a pet dies or they hear someone dying in the media. What are the kinds of conversations, what are the types of questions that children have, and how do parents talk to children about these concepts?
It really sounds like you're expanding your area of research there, and it sounds really interesting. Maybe we'll have you on for another show at some point. The time has flown by here, but we'd really like to thank you, Dr. Tawar, for coming on the show. It's been very interesting, and I'm sure our listeners will be happy to listen to all the information you've given us here and maybe to even contact you. How can they contact you?
Well, they can contact me. I have a website, which is www.talwarresearch.com, or they can email us at talwarresearch@hotmail.com, or they can just Google me. And if they Google me, I will come up. Victoria Talwar will come up easily. They can just check McGill University, and there's a phone number, which is 514-398-8059. So all those ways they can find me. I'm not too hard to find.
Thank you so much, Dr. Talwar. It has been great
talking to you.
And maybe we'll get a chance to talk again soon.
Oh, it was great. Thank you. It was so much my pleasure.
Have a great evening.
Bye.
Bye-bye. that's it for us. You can visit us at familyanatomy.com. That's our website. Or you can email us at info@familyanatomy.com. And as always, Dr. Brian has an announcement.
Let's talk about Facebook for a second. Family Anatomy has a Facebook page, a fan page. And anytime we post something on the website, we also post a link to that over on Facebook. There are several people following us there, and you can share our information on Facebook as well. So if you go to facebook.com, search for Family Anatomy, you'll find us. Click the Become a Fan button, and you'll have access to all of the links to the stories that we're putting up on familyanatomy.com. And that's the end of the show, so we're out of here. As usual, we'll leave you with a bit of a tune by Brother Love, and he's over at brotherloverocks.com.
Thanks for listening. A family thing. Hey! You know what to do. FamilyAnatomy.com